A few mornings later, a Sunday it was, I was showering and I heard the phone ring and pondered, I'm almost done, not soapy. Should I step out and answer the phone or should I just let the machine take it? I stepped out. I tiptoed, dripping water across the bedroom floor with only a towel around my head, and I picked up the phone. It was John Cleese apologizing profoundly for being so hard to catch, sounding exactly like John Cleese. We talked a bit about people we knew in common and then about the project. His idea and point of view on the proposed documentary series, Every Man's Guide to Enlightenment, was exactly parallel to my own. That is, that people feel a soul emptiness but don't realize where it is coming from. And so to fill their houses, heads, hearts, and stomachs with stuff, the latest trends, commercial products, and, oh, by the way, I'm sure that a successful business project will be the answer. They want happiness, an inner peace, and a sense of fulfillment, but are looking for it in all the wrong places. Meanwhile, I was standing by my bed trying to air dry, feeling slightly strange even though he could never know, hopefully, that I was naked as a jaybird. I was listening carefully. After a bit, I was using the towel for my head to dry my body. A strange scene, admittedly, but I was engaged totally in the conversation. We talked about how, in our consumer society, materiality is not all it is built up to be, and that it has not brought anyone lasting spiritual fulfillment. That said, throughout the conversation, while saying that he wanted to do this project and that he thought it was important, he kept using one phrase. He had to make sure his nut was covered. You have to understand about my nut, he kept saying. And each time, I'd say, okay, I understand. After 20 or 30 minutes, I'd air dried and laid down on my bed, stark naked, and he is still talking about covering his nut. And I'm thinking, this is a Monty Python scene written by John Cleese right here. We agreed to meet in New York City. We'd been passing, via email, all sorts of proposals and screen treatments, approved and blessed by him, and written by Marilyn Schlitz and Dean Radin. I had been busy having conversations with executives at HBO. During the entire conversation, I had a silly grin on my face and was grateful that I lived alone. After a few discussions via conference calls and masses of emails, I received a message. HBO's interested in your John Cleese project. I hustled to NYC to meet with him to talk about the particulars and his nut, by which he meant money. My partner in this was Diane, late of A&E and the History Channel, and queen of Manhattan restaurants. John had wanted to go to Barney's, the department store with a great restaurant where others of his status and fame met for lunch. Diane wanted to go to the newest, hottest place on the Upper East Side, a place whose name I've since forgotten. It was one of those places with silk on the walls and heavy silver silverware and real china and crystal stemware. It was a tiny place with tables so close you could barely squeeze through, and prices not to be believed. You also had to have reservations weeks in advance. Diane's sister was a professional high-end restaurant diner, so she got us a reservation. I thought out loud that maybe he'd be more comfortable in a place he was used to, but Diane thought he'd be more impressed at the newest hot restaurant. Diane and I arrived early and were immediately seated. It was so damn tight between the tables that we could barely get our chairs out to sit, and once sitting, there was no moving. Thank God we were early. They would have had to move out several tables for the four of us to get seated at the same time. John and his assistant arrived exactly on time and squeezed in. John is very tall, perhaps 6'4 or 6'5, so people all around him had to move a bit so he could pull his chair out. Meanwhile, the waiter hovered around trying to do everything he could to be helpful. The place was above with, "Isn't that John Cleese?" We were finally settled, and the table was gorgeous. It had every utensil imaginable and blocks of Himalayan pink salt, coasters for our glasses, for the flowers. Pink salt was everywhere. John picked up everything on the table, asking, "Whatever is this for? And this block of pink, whatever is this?" Salt, he was told. We were brought appetizers on blocks of pink salt. Salt and pepper for each of us on blocks of pink salt. John joked with the waiter about the pink salt and asked, astutely, if the owner of the restaurant owned the pink salt company. The waiter looked around and said hesitantly, "Yes, he does own the Himalayan pink salt company."